This is Jane McGonigal, the author of Super Better and a big fan of the Psych Tech Podcast. You're listening to Psych Tech Podcast, where you will get the future of psychology and technology.
Welcome to Psych Tech, the Psychology and Technology Podcast, where on every episode, I, Josue Cardona, and my wonderful co-host, Kelly Dunlap, do what exactly, Kelly?
I think we're supposed to talk about psychology and technology.
But we also explore the human side of technology.
We do. We do that too.
What we're going to talk about this week is the sharing personal information online, how that's kind of changing right now in terms of social media. And then a little later on, we'll talk about sharing information about our children specifically. So this conversation came up because Facebook recently reported that personal sharing, like people talking about what they had for breakfast and what they're thinking, is on a decline. And I thought that that was interesting. And I'm wondering if you have seen that in any way, or if you think, like, if you noticed that, or does that reflect your behavior online in any way?
It's hard to tell. I don't think I ever really followed people who only posted pictures of their breakfast. So I don't know if it specifically have affected my newsfeed, but I know if you talk to people who are not connected through Facebook or Twitter or any other social media, the number one thing that at least I always hear is, you know, I don't have a very interesting life. I don't want to talk about what I had for breakfast. Or alternatively, I don't want to read about what somebody else had for breakfast. So the stereotype around really mundane things being shared over social media, I think, is really prolific. And obviously, if they're doing a study on it, then there must have been some kind of scientific foundation for that.
Yeah, and it's not so much a study. I think it's just that they're looking at – see, the thing with social media that I think isn't a part of the conversation often enough is the fact that some of these companies like Facebook, like Twitter, their main product is us, right? It's whatever we produce. The content – if we're producing content, they can make money. And we're the product. And if we're not sharing personal information, right? So 20% decline is pretty big. And I think that the problem that you're seeing is that they're making less money off of that. And as a social platform, as a, you know, somewhere where people think about it as a way of making personal connections, it's kind of strange that people aren't doing that anymore. And I have some theories as to why that is. But what is, like, has your behavior changed at all, either recently or over time?
I don't think so. I mean, I guess I could go back to, you know, scroll through my Facebook feed and look at 2009 Kelly, but I'm pretty sure 2009 Kelly was complaining about finals the same way that 2016 Kelly is. So, if I had to guess, it's that people are just more comfortable with being online, and it's not necessarily about promoting what you're doing right this moment as opposed to sharing ideas. Because I know that's what my Twitter feed and what my Facebook feed generally tend to be, is people sharing their ideas about a multitude of things. So whether it's sharing comics or sharing a review of something or, you know, sharing a political post or sometimes there are like reflective pieces, but a lot of times it's just either really short status updates, which are fine because I care enough to look at it, or pieces that have been produced by media outlets that have been shared to my wall.
So do you go on Facebook to read, primarily to read news articles and get news, I guess?
I would say I go on Facebook feed to see what my friends are doing. Inherent in that is seeing what they're posting about, what they're interested in, and what their topic of the day is. But I would not say I go on Facebook to read about news, if that makes sense.
Okay. Yeah. So that means you fall under the, like, to you, Facebook is a place to connect with people, right? One way, even if it is not live, right? But just to, like you said, like to keep, you know, stay aware of what your friends are doing.
Yeah.
So do you use Twitter the same way?
No, actually, if I was to have a more quote-unquote newsy social media feed, it would be Twitter. I know I follow a bunch of academic journals. I follow a bunch of game-related journals. I follow smart people like Jean McGonigal and Neil deGrasse Tyson and Bill Nye, along with my friends. So I would say that's probably a little bit more 50-50 split, and that I would go to my Twitter feed to find out information about something that's going on. So, you know, when people are like live tweeting events, that's one reason I would tune into my Twitter feed. Or, you know, the fact that news comes across my quote unquote desk on Twitter is one of the reasons that I enjoy it so much. So how about you?
Yeah, for me, yeah, like I don't like I've never been a huge fan of Facebook because it was all the personal sharing. And only recently when, or I don't know how recent it was, when Facebook allowed you to stay friends with somebody but unfollow them so you couldn't see all their posts.
Oh, I do that all the time.
That I really, yeah, yeah. And that's when I really started using Facebook again, because then I turned Facebook into a, like my Facebook wall turned into, or my feed turned into a news feed versus a friend feed. And because I really wasn't, I really didn't care. And I wasn't, see, because it's also, it's more than just caring. It's like, it's not entertaining. It wasn't a way that I would want to spend my time. Mm-hmm. So I spent a lot of time on Twitter looking at news articles. But even just the fact that Twitter is able to, like you have this limitation of 140 characters. So even if you wanted to say what you were thinking, it would be short and concise and it would just breeze by. But somebody on Facebook can write an essay about, you know, an experience they just had at the ATM. And I see a wall of text. I don't want to read that. I don't even want it in my feed. Mm-hmm. So I didn't used to use Facebook very often, and I still don't use it that often. I'm actually trying to use social networks and social media more. Like I'm actively trying to use it a lot more. And one thing that I've found is that at least – so my version of Facebook is different than maybe my mom's version, where she probably – if she hasn't unfollowed a lot of people, she's seeing a lot of random thoughts and opinions and just, you know, basic postings about people and their lives versus the news article necessarily. Mm-hmm. Although I have seen her also posting more news and, you know, so things that are – she's just sharing another website's content. But what I've found is that other social media, other social networks are like just more fun. Like I find Instagram, because it's a visual, a little more fun than Facebook. And but it doesn't easily allow you to go to news sites and things like that. So I follow very different brands on Instagram. And like recently I've been using Snapchat a lot. And Snapchat is like a completely different experience, where it's just a lot more fun than Facebook. Like Facebook doesn't seem fun anymore. And I think that for that personal sharing component, it feels like there are better ways or better places to do it or be more expressive mm-hmm. than Facebook. Musical.ly, for example, I don't know if you've seen Musical.ly. Musical.ly is pretty popular right now. And it's a completely different way of saying something or showing off something. It's a lot of fun. And it skews a lot younger. It skews very, very young. So I wonder if that also has to do with it, where just the young people are posting more often on these other sites just because their attention is divided up.
So I'm on a college campus several times a week, and I am surrounded by quote-unquote younger people, not radically different from I am, but there, you know, could easily be a decade between myself and somebody that I would see walking around on campus. And from talking with the undergrads, because one of the classes I took this semester is with undergrads, and they, from my experience, don't have Facebook and they don't have Twitter. Those are old people things from what I understand. And they are more interested in things like Snapchat and Instagram or Tumblr that are very different ways of conveying information. And I guess the way I've kind of always thought about it in my head is Facebook was big when you and I were in college. So right now it's kind of where the old people are. And I think the stats for Facebook have really shown that it skews a lot older than it used to. And for me, Facebook is awesome for keeping up with my friends who are also happen to be my same age, because we all got on the Facebook hype train together. Keeping up with my family, because even older than I am, like my mother and my grandmother or on Facebook. And Facebook, I still think, has the best events system that I have come across on a social media network. So being able to RSVP or decline and get information across. But again, that's probably largely contingent on all the people that I would go to an event with are already on Facebook because of they're in my similar age cohort. That said, I do have Snapchat, and I feel old and inept because I have a really hard time figuring it out. I think the interface is pretty terrible, actually. But, you know, I have Snapchat.
You're so old.
I am. Oh. I am. So Ellie, my beagle, she has a Tumblr page. Obviously, I maintain it for her. She's very smart, but she doesn't have thumbs. And that's a really fun way. And I just keep track of all the beagle news that comes along. And, you know, it's just a different avenue for me to express what I'm interested in and get information specifically tailored to what I'm interested in. The Tumblr page specifically, it's pictures of adorable beagles, which I think is fine. And then I think about something like Twitter. And whenever I talk to people who tend to skew younger than I am, they don't see a point to it, which is fine. But I also feel like they also don't tend to see it as the networking opportunity that it is. And that also is an age-related thing. You know, as an adult, I really love the fact that I can have contacts with people who could be potential employers or might be able to hook me up with a job in the future or are potential collaborators on professional projects. But I could definitely see a 16 or 17-year-old not caring about that. And I think that's totally normal. And the same way that, you know, young people liked rock and roll and the older generation didn't, and, you know, jazz and that kind of thing, I think it's just a natural, it's the natural, like, breathing life cycle of the internet.
Looking at what the companies are reporting and also talking to different people, different ages, and, you know, Facebook does have a lot of young people, and Twitter has a lot of young people, and it's very much a local thing, right? So, like, if all of your friends are on one thing, then you're probably on that same thing. You're not going to be the only one on Snapchat when everybody else is on Instagram. So that has a lot to do with it. And overall, all of these social networks are growing. They're gigantic. They have tons of users. And but I just think because of the options and because now they're so different, there's a very interesting way that people are using them. So one of the most difficult things for me in trying to be more active recently was that really, like, you shouldn't be posting on Instagram. Like, there's a way to post on Instagram, and there's a way to post on Twitter. There's a way to post on Facebook. And if you're doing the same thing across all three, it's kind of weird. You know, they're not designed to be used exactly the same way.
It's tacky.
And it's yeah, that's it depends on how you're doing it, right? And just because, again, they're not built that way, and you can tell when people do that. And so there's a big difference between how, like, a brand would use these different models and how a person would, right? So, you know, we have things that we can promote, right? So, like, we recently went to PAX East and we have a podcast and we write stuff. So it's different to kind of as far as brand promotion and also, you know, just personal thoughts. So I think I'm reluctant, period, to share my thoughts on Facebook, but I don't feel that way on Twitter. And that's because of the network that I've created on Twitter. I don't follow my friends, my family on Twitter, or they're just not there. But my friends are in professional connections, and potential professional connections are on Twitter. So like you mentioned before, that's the way I see Twitter. Mm-hmm. And I still see Facebook as a personal information sharing place. But I just find it weird. Like, Facebook is complaining that people are not using it for that. They recently had their F8 conference, and they showed all of their tools. So Facebook owns WhatsApp, Instagram, Facebook, obviously. And then they've branched out Messenger as its own app. So, and then they had this graph where it showed how each one of these things is for something completely different. I believe they had groups. They're also pages as a separate thing. So they're starting to look at each component separately. And I think that's kind of smart, because Facebook is, you could do so much in Facebook. You mentioned the events, right? They do a good job on that, as long as you're on Facebook. And, you know, the actual Facebook part in the middle was the friend component, that socializing part. So I don't think that people are sharing less overall. I just think it's interesting that they're sharing less on Facebook in particular, because, man, like on Twitter, people share a lot of stuff. On it's so strange to see Instagram and Snapchat the way people are using those. So interesting conversation. I don't think people are sharing less overall. Do you?
No, I think there's just more and more people onboarding, but there's a lot more options than there used to be. I mean, Facebook used to be the only one. And if you wanted to have that kind of social connectivity, you had to get on Facebook. But now you're seeing this huge expanse, and it's not that you have to get a one-size-fits-all type of feeling, which is what I think Facebook does. You can have a social media experience that's really tailored to your strengths. So I know we've talked about the cultures of different online communities before. So for example, Instagram is all about pictures. And one of the reasons that I'm not on Instagram is because I am not artistic in any sense of the word. My pictures are not pretty. I don't make things to take pretty pictures of. It's just, to me, when I conceptualize Instagram, to me, it's a very artistic cultural space. And I know it's used for a lot of different reasons, but those tend to be visual reasons, which is one reason that I don't really worry about us having a psych tech Instagram, because we're more audio. And I think there are other platforms that are more conducive to people who are interested in audio than, say, maybe on Instagram. Not that we couldn't, but it might not be the best fit, as opposed to, say, Facebook, which is kind of where my friends and family hang out, and Twitter, where my business acquaintances and my gamer friends hang out, versus Tumblr, which is where I share obsessive pictures of my dog. So I feel like they all have their own certain little place, and they all give you a different experience. Snapchat, for example, is something I would only use if I was feeling excessively stupid or silly, or just wanted something that it was so small it didn't even warrant a tweet, or didn't even warrant a post on Facebook, but something that I wanted to share with my friends because I thought it was ridiculous.
An excellent point of something that you just said is the way who you're connecting with. So maybe as a brand, we're being stupid by not being on Instagram, because there's a lot of eyes there, and, you know, we would reach more people. But if we're just thinking about reaching people, if we assume that people on Instagram are more visual than audio, and so they wouldn't appreciate an audio podcast there, then that makes sense. And I think that because I think, right, we've gotten away from that conversation of like, oh, social networks and interacting online is a bad thing. We don't talk about that anymore as much, because it's such a normal part of our lives and we have so many different options. I think this is part of my theory that we're just connecting in a more private way instead of a more public way.
Yeah.
So while my Facebook profile is now set to public, so that anything that I share, I don't worry about who I want to see it. I just think 100% of the time it's always public. So anybody can, even if you're not my friend, you can still follow me and see the stuff that I post. I keep that in mind when I'm posting stuff. But that means that I'm using it as more of a, I don't use it for intimate conversations.
Right.
For that, on Facebook, I'm using Messenger. Mm-hmm. And even on Snapchat, I love the tools that it has. And I'm starting to use it more as a messaging tool than an actual broadcast tool. So even though I might add something to a story, which will disappear in 24 hours, the actual experience of connecting one-on-one with someone or in a small group is more fun on Snapchat. So some friends, now I snap them. That is where I think the problem, it's not a problem for us. For us, it's fantastic. For me in particular, it's fantastic because I'd rather have a lot of these conversations in private. Like you and I talk shop, right, on a Slack channel. We don't do that publicly on Twitter. Mm-hmm. And there's a reason for that, right? And so I think everybody's just doing that more often, even if we're switching from using just regular texting to these more multimedia-friendly platforms. I that's my theory anyway, that's what's happening. We want more intimate connections versus public conversations.
Yeah, I don't think I'd ever thought of it that way, but I definitely agree. You know, I think about what I post to Facebook versus what I post to Twitter versus what goes out in a, you know, just plain old text message to my friends and whatnot, or a private message. And I can see why that would make the bigger companies upset, because obviously they want to mine your data, and they want to know what you're saying and what you're talking about and who you're talking to. So taking it more
And throw
private,
ads around it.
right? So taking it more private is, to me, makes a lot of sense. And I also see it as kind of the swinging pendulum, where, again, which we've talked about before, is that there's been this big push for everything to be public. You know, when Facebook came out and Twitter and all the social media feeds, there was a lot of concern about, oh, you know, in 30 years when there's a presidential election, people are going to be able to go through the potential running mate's Instagram and find some incriminating photo, and kids that don't recognize the implications of putting something on the internet. And then, you know, everything's so public, and now it's swinging back the other way, where we're looking for things that will let us have privacy in a public place, whether it's that necklace that, you know, notices if someone's about to take a picture and whites out your face, or something as simple as, well, they're not simple, something as simple as privacy settings on Facebook. And the internet is not just a place to broadcast yourself, but it's a place to have meaningful relationships and to connect through those meaningful relationships. And I think that's where the struggle is right now, because I'm not so much looking at Facebook for brand advice or style advice or news advice. I'm just looking to see my friends and what they're up to. I'm not looking to buy.
And again, I think now, perhaps to its detriment, it's added so much flexibility that it can be whatever you want it to be. So like for me, it is. I do get news from Facebook, just like I get news on Twitter. And it's funny that Twitter recently rebranded its app on iPhones on the Apple App Store as a news app, which to me again feels like really weird because even though I do use it for that, perhaps even primarily, I do use it to network personally also a lot. So it's weird that they see themselves as that. But what I think is going to happen if Facebook is reporting this as a problem, or if people are reporting this as a problem, and they're trying to make money, I think we're just going to start seeing ads inside our personal conversations. Like, I don't see any other way around that. If
Well,
they're trying to make ads, you know, like in our Messenger conversation or in our WhatsApp, or possibly even, you know, like Slack is different. Slack will charge us if we use it more, but so that may not happen there, but maybe. And WhatsApp actually started charging $1, or it was going to charge $1, and then it got rid of that. So I'm wondering, how are you going to make money then? And so I see a personal, intimate conversation with ads future.
I have a hard time with that, because when I think about a personal intimate conversation, I think more like instant messaging on my phone. I don't necessarily think Facebook or any of the other places where I would, I mean, even on Messenger, I feel like I have to go, I don't have the app, I don't think, at least definitely not on my desktop, but I have to go to Facebook anyway to get to the Messenger, at least for my desktop. And so there's still plenty of ch chances to bombard me with advertisements and whatnot. But I mean, so far your instant messaging has remained pretty secure and pretty private. I mean, at least from what I understand, and that's been a lot around a lot longer than social media has.
Well, do you mean text messaging, like one-on-one?
Yes.
Yeah, so that there we're paying the provider, right? We're paying,
Oh, I
you're
see what you
paying
mean.
your, right? So
Okay.
there is a model there, but what about Facebook's Messenger app or their WhatsApp app, right? So I agree. I think if they start putting ads into my Messenger app or my WhatsApp app, I'll probably start using text messaging again more. Because I'm already paying for that and it's done and it's sort of right. I mean, you're paying for your internet service. Like the cost there depends if you're using data or if you're going over a cellular network. I mean, you know, that's the type of thing that we don't think about. I don't know. I think I can't see another way for them to monetize those personal conversations, other than maybe like selling emojis or selling like different templates or things like that. You know, like I'm trying to think what's going to happen, because if they're complaining about not growing and not making money, they're going to try some stuff like this, which is going to annoy a lot of people. But on the same point, like Snapchat is a lot of fun because it lets you do so many silly things and it just makes the experience more fun.
But I guess the counter to that is that if, say, Snapchat started charging, then you know there's going to be a Snapchat clone that doesn't charge that's going to come out in, you know, a week or something like that. And I think that's one of the challenging things is if you start charging and the service is not that unique, you're going to see a clone come up, which is why for example, I really have been trying to think about why I will pay money for some of my apps, but not for others. So, for example, Evernote, I pay the full premium hardcore Evernote yearly fee, particularly because it allows me to annotate PDFs. And that one function for me as an academic is probably the most important thing I've ever done in my life, is annotate PDFs and then being able to search PDFs throughout all of them, which is something I cannot really do with anything else in my life. And so it definitely has a very powerful place. Dropbox is another example where I'm happy to pay for something, even though I could have I do have a free version in Google Drive, but so many professional connections I've made use Dropbox. So once again, it's that social component of, well, everybody else has it. And, you know, when you're dealing with files the size of games, you do really need something like Dropbox.
Last week, I filled out a survey that was sent to me from Evernote asking how much would be, like, regarding the pricing structure of Evernote, because I'm also a premium subscriber. And it was like, how much would be, like, at what value do you think, do you start to think that the app maybe isn't so good? And at what price point do you think it would just be too much? And, you know, it has a lot to do with the value of the application. One of the reasons why Instagram grew so quickly is because it had this filter function that no other, like not even your camera on your phone had, mm-hmm. right? And Snapchat appeals to younger people who want some sort of secrecy, right? Like that it disappears and it's really hard to find somebody on Snapchat. And so I'm with you, right? There's these small things. And you were going to mention something about Twitter.
Oh, yeah. I mean, Twitter has talked about having a premium service. Like it would be free, but you could say pay $5 a month and it would get rid of ads and maybe give you some other kind of feature. And I would totally do that because Twitter is really, really important to me. And that's a service that I would pay for. But there's a lot of others, like I wouldn't pay for a Tumblr. I wouldn't pay for a lot of other things. But it's got to be so difficult for these companies. And I try to empathize with them in that everybody uses it in a different way for a different reason. And so trying to find something that they all have in common. I mean, Evernote, the idea is that you are taking notes, and there's some assumptions you can make about people who are taking notes and trying to be organized, that, you know, they want features that help them do those things. Whereas Twitter, it could be a networking thing, it could be a social platform, it could be a way that your brand markets itself, it could be a way of sharing funny cat videos. There's just, to me, it's almost impossible to think about what would be enticing to an enticing feature that I would pay for on Twitter that might be the same between you and me and somebody else.
Yeah, I don't know. It'll be interesting to see what happens. But, you know, if keep an eye out, everybody. Let me know if you think that, you know, your feed has changed over time. Again, one of my theories is we want more intimate connections. We don't want to have them publicly, and there's more options to do that even within, right, like right in the Facebook window if you're on a desktop, right, which is an experience. The other thing I think is happening is maybe finally, after all this time, people are more conscious about their online identity. And maybe, you know, people are starting to realize, wow, maybe I shouldn't post every picture of my breakfast or, you know, the party I went to last night or how I feel about my neighbor, my boss, etc. Because that happens a lot. And guess what? There can be lots of consequences. And many times those consequences do not appear right when you wrote that thing because they're saved for a really long time and somebody can go back and see your opinion on, I don't know, something you said about, you know, Hillary Clinton 4 years ago. And now you're saying something else. And if somebody really wanted, they could go back and I don't know. You never know where you're going to be. So my second theory is related to that. Like people are just you know, finally, on a grander scale, taking more responsibility over their personal identity.
I mean, it's the idea that the internet is coming of age. I mean, you think about the internet as a whole. Obviously, it's
maturing.
That's exactly what it is. You see it with the internet. You see it with social media. You see it with games. You see it with a lot of what I guess you would call new media. Is that not only are the users maturing, but the developers are maturing, and this is what happens. I mean, you're seeing these things again that swing back and forth from one extreme to the other, and yeah, I really do think it's like watching a kid grow up. You're watching some kind of entity, you know, whether it's artificial intelligence or just systems and softwares and networks, they're maturing, they're evolving, and they're refining. They're evolving. That's basically what it is. They're becoming better and better at what they do and becoming more efficient at it and better at it.
So one area where I think that where people continue, the people who continue to share, and maybe the majority of the things that I see on my feed are still visual, are still pictures. And so perhaps we're maturing in one area. And one area where I think we haven't matured yet necessarily is on posting information about other people, specifically children. So do you have a lot of baby pictures or kid pictures in your feed?
No, but ask me again. Ask me again in August. Oh
no, no, I don't mean you posting. I mean people, other people, like that shows up in your news feed in your feed on Facebook, like from other people posting.
I blame it on pregnancy brain, but I often see updates about my friends' children. Yes,
right. So for me, that's always been. It's kind of bothered me because so I have nieces and nephews, and I'll often tell my sisters like, did you ask their permission before you posted those pictures on Facebook? And they always laugh it off. And I think, really, like, what would it have been like? Like, I know you've mentioned that your grandfather was a photographer and took tons of pictures of you. What if all those pictures were online now? What effect would that have? What would that do? And before you answer that, right, I found this article. It's from a couple of years back. And it was called, Why We Post Nothing About Our Kid Online. Nothing. It's the only way to defend her against facial recognition, Facebook profiling, and corporate data mining. And it's written by a data scientist who made the choice to take control of their child's online identity before the child is even born. So they bought up a domain name for the kid. They got social media accounts and everything that was popular and for that name to kind of take control of that name and reserve it so that when the child was finally at an age where they felt they were, you know, responsible enough or understood what your online identity means or what effects it can have to have a, you know, negative information on there, they could kind of give them the keys to their personal online identity with their real name and kind of take it from there instead of them building up all these things over their childhood.
Well, I mean, as someone who is expecting, I will say I have reserved the child's gamer tag already. A really adorable combination of my gamer tag and my husband's gamer tag. And so that's...
Wait. So you're talking about on Xbox Live?
Yeah.
So what are you paying an extra yearly?
No. That's not how Xbox Live works.
How do you reserve a gamer tag?
Well, I mean, I had to pay to create the gold, it's a silver account right now. So
gotcha. You're right. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
Gotcha,
so a gold account is you would pay for, and that would go into our family plan. But yeah, for right now, we basically just more or less just registered the name. So that little mini me will have his very specific gamer tag whenever he's ready to use it. talking about I'll never post anything about my child ever. I'm sitting here thinking I've already posted sonogram pictures. So, well, it's too late now. But I definitely think it's just going to be a personal choice. I know there are some people who are hard set against it. Honestly, I just, as terrible as it sounds, I just don't care. I don't foresee a future where the fact that I posted my child's first birthday photos on Facebook is going to have significant negative ramifications. And I could be completely wrong. Maybe. But at this point, especially since Facebook already is restricted to friends and family. Like, that those are the only people who can see. You can't even share. A friend of mine can't share my stuff with one of their friends of friends. Don't even have that. So there is maybe a sense of security in that. But then again, I totally respect parents who don't want to have anything to do with it. And I think it just comes down to a priority of what you want to worry about. And as a future parent to be, I feel that there are already so many other things that I'm worrying about, that worrying about whether or not putting a picture of my baby online is going to have a negative impact on their life in 20 years is just not something that is registering.
And so to the question of how, or have you ever thought about what it would have been like, or have you ever thought at all about like all those pictures that do exist of you if they were online in some way?
I mean, some of them are.
No concern.
Mm-hmm. Some of them are, but I mean, if you want to look at 8-year-old Kelly, okay. I don't care. But then again, I was a very boring child. I was a very good child. I didn't ever find myself in compromising situations that I would later regret in life. So maybe that said, I'm not sad that mobile phones with cameras didn't really exist when I was in middle school, you know, or high school, or in my formative teenage years. Like, there wasn't mass ways of sharing information like there are now, and that's probably a good thing. At the same time, the kid is going to grow up in that environment. It's not going to be a surprise to them. It's not going to be this thing that has sprung upon them, as opposed to somebody who was 30 when the iPhone came out. You know, that's a radical shift. Or, you know, my grandparents who lived most of their lives without the internet, and then suddenly there is internet. That's a dramatic shift. So I think it's hard to imagine what we can't imagine, I guess, is as lame and philosophical as that sounds, that I can't imagine I have a very difficult time imagining a time without the internet. And I cannot remember a time without a computer. So it's really difficult for me to see the shift, I guess, and just acknowledging that these things that I grew up with, you know, my kid is going to grow up with even more. And they're going to know how to deal with it, and I'm going to have to stay on top of it as a parent. But I don't necessarily see it as a bad thing. Now, to your point about asking the kids permission, I think once they're old enough to have that kind of cognitive capacity, then yes, I would want to ask. That would be important to me to ask. But, you know, if my 1-year-old is running around with a diaper on his head, sorry, kid, that's going on Facebook.
And so why, I mean, I can envision quite a few different Black Mirror-esque episodes of disaster scenarios, and I'll get into those in a second. But I'm curious, so why exactly did you get the gamer tag?
Because the culture that is with my husband and myself, I mean, the reason that we even met was because of Halo, and we run a Halo community, and, you know, both of our gamer tags are known in the Halo community space. And so part of it is just kind of like cultural legacy, I guess, because it is a combination of our two tags, and it's really super cute. And also knowing that somebody might take it, and we don't want somebody to impersonate our baby. I don't think that would actually happen. But I mean, you were talking earlier about, you know, people getting the web domains for their kid. And that's something that I could see doing, because I know when I was in grad school, I got the email account or the Google account that was tied to me being Dr. Kelly Dunlap before, like 2 years before, 3 years before I even graduated. So I didn't use it, but it was there for when I needed it. And I know my husband John does something similar, where when there's a new thing that comes out, so within a week or two of Snapchat being released, he had an account with his name. Didn't use it, but it's almost like a placeholder for if I want to use it in the future, this is for me. And so I think that probably has a lot to do with it.
Yeah. And that's exactly why in that article, the person writing that article is talking about her and her spouse absolutely wanting to have some sort of control, like maybe make it a little easier for their kid, you know, mm-hmm. when they do want to get into the space. Like, you know, and there's also some hope there, right? Like you hope that your kid will like, you know, will want that gamer tag or be on Xbox Live instead of, I don't know, PlayStation Network. There are.
We'll keep him away from Uncle Josue.
Hey, the more you push them towards one thing, it's very likely they'll go the other direction. But I think, but I think there are some interesting things. For example, and so the article, and I'm going to put it in the show notes because I think it's really interesting. It is possibly the extreme of what we're discussing, right? Mm-hmm. And so the facial recognition part is really interesting because that technology has been around for a very, very long time. So I could search for a face and have just years worth of information come up for somebody, depending on how much is online. That information can be tied to all sorts of other information. So possibly, you know, based on baby pictures alone and pictures throughout childhood, whether you want it or not, especially further in the future, I'll be able to map out every single place where you ever lived or ever were. You know, and different times where you were with different people. And I think it goes into that area of just privacy. Like maybe it isn't that big of a deal that that kind of information is out there, but it does get to a point where, wow, that's way more information than I wanted publicly available. And what ways are there for me to kind of offset that within, you know, privacy settings and different things? What happens when other people start posting pictures of me or my parents posted all these pictures of me and now there's all this information? What if a child is transgender and in the future they want their identity to be very clear and established and because of their parents they have 20 years worth of pictures where there's a completely different gender? Or maybe their parents were involved in something that they want to distance themselves from. And all of a sudden you have now this situation where you cannot deny the data, but you, and it was completely put out there without any input from you. So while I do have some difficulty finding, you know, a lot of nightmare scenarios for this kind of thing, it is just a level of privacy. Like I don't let anybody tag me on anything. You know, I'm glad that like Facebook has this feature where you can review everything before you will, you know, before anybody can try to tag you, but you still have to approve it. And I appreciate that because there's a lot of things where I don't want people to know that I was either associated with this or I was there or, and not for any negative or scary reasons, but it just, there's only so much I'm willing to share. Mm-hmm. And I do have, well, I have tons of mixed feelings about the kid thing because there's also this culture of exploitation of children online, which really, really frustrates me. And I'm not just talking about, look how cute my baby is, here's a picture of him and you're sharing it with family and friends. I'm talking about social accounts that are built on, it's the social media version of the little, what is it called? The like the beauty queen little kids.
Oh, Toddlers in Tiaras?
Yes, yes, that type of thing, right? Where I've seen Musical.ly accounts, I've seen Snapchat accounts where like parents are making their children sing and dance and do all these things, and their pictures are in the profile. And there are laws. There's a COPPA law in the United States that requires that for any sort of account for anything online, the child has to be 13 years or older. Mm-hmm. And a kid just has to lie about that, right? But that's there for their protection. But like at the extreme, I'm seeing parents who are literally exploiting their kids for likes, follows, shares, and like it is scary to think that when the kid is just a little bit older, they'll look back and think, holy shit, I have a fan base, or I have their t-shirts with my face on them, or all these type of things. And then there's also like cyberbullying can be so, so bad. Harassment online can be so bad. And now I have access to all these pictures from when you were a kid. And now I have, you know, like there's more data for me to work with. And those are like the negative ones. They're still benign stuff. Like, well, you know, in 10 years, I'm going to, when the new, I don't know, like right now there's a Ninja Turtles movie coming out. If there were pictures of me as a kid liking Ninja Turtles, they could data mine for that and then target that movie to me based on my interests when I was 10. And that sort of thing makes me feel uncomfortable, but it's possible only if that much information is out there.
Mm-hmm. So it almost sounds like child star syndrome, you know?
Well, that's one potential part of it, right? Because just like, again, the targeting a movie based on my interest 10 or 15 years ago, to me, that seems creepy and presumptuous, right? But it's still something that I'd rather not have that much information on me out there. And again, after a certain age, I'm responsible for a lot of it. But what bothers me is an adult or adults, right? Depends on the situation. It could be like your grandparents or your aunts and uncles or family friends that are actually posting this information. And without even knowing or creating this entire profile for you online that, you know, there's lots of things there that could potentially affect you just because it's information that you don't want out there.
I think it ultimately is going to come down to a level of comfort, like most things. And one thing that I always try to remind myself is that the internet I know right now is not going to be the internet that exists when my kid is 5, much less when my kid is 15. So there's, I'm sure, going to be a whole new world of things that are going on and other things to be concerned about. And I think it's important absolutely to keep in mind the fact that, you know, what you put on the internet is there forever, and to be mindful of what you post. And although I tend not to have a lot of concerns, I also am very conscious about what I post, you know, on Facebook or anywhere else. I do try to keep that in mind. So I think it's a balancing act that's going to happen between the parent and the child. It's a balancing act between the societal norms of the internet and whatever that's working against at the time. And it's going to be in response to what happens next. You know, what is the next thing for the web? What does web 4.0 look like? What's involved? What's the next big app? You know, is Black Mirror going to become a reality that we have to seriously think about? Or is it something that's just kind of an exercise in, you know, just trying to be a smart person? I guess that's the way I think about it. I don't think of myself as being a perfect parent. I Lord knows I won't be a perfect parent, but just aiming for that good enough, smart, you know, I'm not going to post my kid's social security number online. I'm not going to do stuff like that. I think it ultimately is just about your level of comfort and how much you worry about Skynet. And Josue, I think you worry about Skynet more than I do.
So really the reason to bring this up is definitely the awareness component, because how often do people think about this and the potential of potential for harm or benefit either way, right? I mean, if your goal is to make your kid a star, you know, absolutely start young. And my strong feelings come into protection of the child's control over any of that, you know? And so I'm not saying that there should be a law that says that you can't post stuff about your kid, but I'm not saying I'd be against that either.
Yeah, I'd be against it. I feel like that's a violation of my First Amendment rights.
See, but there it goes, right? It's like, is it like who, like, you know, who controls the privacy of who, and at what age do you start drawing that line?
But I mean, that 18, like, or you can get an emancipated minor at 16. I mean, it is presumed that a parent is responsible for all aspects of their child, including their privacy. You know, it all falls on the parent, at least in this particular case. So,
well, again, the COPPA laws are at 13, right? So already there are all of these exceptions, you know? The world is very different from when it was established that, yeah, 18 is it, you know? And there's still, you know, depending on the state, the driving age is different, the drinking age is different. So there's a lot of conversations that can happen there. And I can say I did not have any sort of issue with my parents sharing too much information or posting stuff. Never had that problem. I don't have that problem now. But working with so many young people, it is something that I do worry about, and I wonder what this conversation is going to be like in 10 or 15 years when we'll start hearing about people looking back on this. And actually, I don't remember if was it in the Black Mirror episode, The History of You? I think part of the discussion at the beginning was someone suing their parents for actually showing them off before they were 18. I think that was part of that first conversation at the beginning of the episode.
I remember something about a kid suing their parent, but I can't remember why. I thought it was because they weren't a good enough parent or they could show some kind of neglect, but I don't remember entirely.
Oh, yes. That's actually, I think that's what it was. Because there was all this proof now to show, like, look at how I can actually sue you for all this stuff because I have all this information in the back.
Right.
And I think that's exactly along the lines of the type of things that you could show. Like, it could be, again, there's a few nightmare scenarios. I'm not going to go anymore because those are just the negative extreme. But it is something, it is food for thought if you either have children or are planning on having children. It's important to know the access to information that exists, what can be done with that information, and, you know, how we're sharing it can have a huge effect on that. And again, if we keep moving towards more intimate sharing of information where it's just in Messenger, in a text message, then the likelihood of, you know, any, I don't even know what to call this. It's not an invasion of privacy. It's
intrusive.
A parent sharing, like oversharing stuff about their kids to the point where they will retroactively, like they'll feel uncomfortable with it in the future. You know, like that's an interesting conversation. I don't know what to call that.
Well, when we hit Psych Tech episode 540, we'll look back and see how wrong or right we were.
We'll interview your spawn.
Yeah.
And see how they feel about it. Yeah.
All right. Longitudinal case study. Here we come.
Oh, yeah. Data.
Doing it for science.
And that's it for this week's episode of Psych Tech. Find more information about all the stuff we talked about and past episodes at psychtechpodcast.com or find us on Twitter, our preferred social media network, at PsychTechCast. And yeah, that's it for this week. Bye, everybody.
Bye-bye.